The dream world. For many, the dream world is more revealing than the world of apparent reality. In every man, Hugh Lynn Casey once observed, there exists a vast expanse, unfamiliar and unexplored, which sometimes appears in the guise of an angel, other times a monster. This is man's unconscious mind, and the language we call dreams. Although little of Edgar Casey's psychic power apparently has rubbed off on the son, Hugh Lynn, as directed by In Sleeping Father, has carried on diligently with the A.R.E. research effort, establishing a dream seminar at Virginia Beach where psychiatrists and psychologists analyzed dreams that the elder Casey had casually interpreted in his sleep. During his lifetime, Casey gave 600 psychic readings on dreams, some of the most notable his own. The Casey dream readings dealt chiefly with the interpretations of individual dreams, but the symbols and suggestions he advanced for using one's own dreams to advantage still apply. Studying his father's dream readings, Hugh Lynn concluded that dreams are not only a doorway to the unconscious, but can be readily opened by anyone who can recall his own dreams and wants to know what they mean. From experience, the younger Casey has discovered this doorway is as available to the average person as a pencil and pad at his bedside table. At first, on waking, he may not remember a single fragmentary dream, but in time his unconscious will get a prod from the waiting pencil and pad, and will go to work for him, opening wide the possibilities of a whole new area of self-exploration. Through his own dreams, Edgar Casey stressed, a person may gain more understanding of those forces that go to make the real existence what it's all about and what it's good for if the individual would but comprehend the conditions being manifested. Dreams, of course, are a concomitant of sleep, and Casey's description of sleep gives ample indication that this hiatus in the waking life of the individual is designed for more than mere rest of mind and muscle. In sleep, the subconscious mind, more powerful than the conscious, as hypnotism has shown, reviews whatever has passed through the conscious mind, and distills in dreams whatever warnings or messages it finds necessary. Sleep, observed the sleeping Casey, is that period when the soul takes stock of what it has acted upon, from one rest period to another, drawing comparisons, as it were, that make for harmony, peace, joy, love, long-suffering, patience, brotherly love, and kindness fruits of the spirit, or hate, harsh words, unkind thoughts and oppressions which are fruits of Satan. The soul dreaming either abhors what it has passed through, or it enters into the joy of its Lord. Edgar Casey may very well have been the only living man who ever used his own subconscious consciously to interpret the dreams channeled through that subconscious. Through a desire to understand dreams of his own that remained vividly in his consciousness, he began to take interest in the dreams of others. In some dreams he saw an immediate symbology, which antedated by years the symbology generally accepted by the psychiatric profession. Back in January 1925, in perhaps the earliest dream for which he sought an interpretation, Casey visioned a close associate and himself standing together in a rocky area. There were many knots of people standing around, but they were separated from him and other groups by streams of running water. Incongruously, as dreams so often seem, Edgar Casey at this point saw a fish jump out of the water. He tried to catch it, but in the attempt the fish was broken into fragments and he set about to put the pieces together. All through that day and the next, the dream stayed with Casey. It vaguely troubled him, made him uneasy. But think of it as he would, it didn't seem to suggest anything that made sense. Finally, he went into trance, and the suggestion was put to him by his wife that he analyze and interpret the dream. The ever-present Gladys Davis was there to record the interpretation for posterity. Out of this dream came interpretations of symbols useful today to anyone with similar dream images. As Casey said, in the dream of water, with the separating of the acquaintances and the body, we find the manifestation again of the subconscious forces, the water representing the life, the living way, that separates those of every walk of life and exists about each entity or group, building that which radiates in a spiritual sphere, the deeds done in the body. His explanation, with symbology now generally accepted, continued. In the fish is the representation of him who became the living way, the water of life, given for the healing of the nations. In the breaking, in the separation there will yet be brought the force that will again make this the living way, the perfect representation of the force necessary to give life to all. As Casey saw it, this dream came under the heading of spiritual guidance. The fish, of course, symbolized Christ, almost universal symbol, and water, life. Peace would yet come out of war, yet war would come. The dreams fell into four general headings. Some dealt with the problems of the physical body, others with self-observation, psychic perception, and spiritual guidance. The most common dreams appear to stem from the body itself, the dream being the reaction to improper diet, lack of exercise, faulty regimen, the body registering its protest with the unconscious mind through the dream medium. One of these rather ordinary types of dreams was recorded on waking by one of two brothers who had been counseled by Casey to study their dreams. He had the pencil and pad handy, and after writing the dream down, took it to Casey. "I dreamed my brother and I with our wives were out on a party with BB. I fell asleep at the table. We got home very late. My brother left the car, and walked home. He and I stopped to look at a bottle of milk that was marked undistilled milk." To Casey the message was plain. He interpreted it almost literally. It was a warning to the dreamer, Casey said, that his body was suffering from late hours, asleep at the table, and irregular diet, undistilled milk obviously referring to impure milk. The brother was seen as more carefully disciplined leaving the car and going on ahead, rather than taking the chance, apparently, of riding with somebody who had overly imbibed. Seeing the milk also was a warning to change the milk supply. For in reply to a specific question about the part dealing with the milk, Casey had stated, "Change from the present supply, for this shows adulterations in same." Many dreams, as Casey pointed out, dealt with self-study. They included wish-fulfillment dreams, suppress ions, symbolic conflicts between good and evil in our natures, and work or family problems. Often these dreams had a prophetic quality, and were couched in horrible imagery to underline the gravity of the warning. Time after time, Casey unraveled the tangled threads of dreams, psychically interpreting situations subsequently confirmed in ensuing developments. One of the most provocative dreams was that of a businessman in Florida, disturbed by the vivid reality of the dream, and a guilty conscience. He had heard of Casey through a neighbor, whose health had been aided by one of Casey's distant readings, and was delighted that he wouldn't have to lift an arm to get help, just send the dream in with a request for an interpretation. With meticulous detail, the dreamer, a married man with two children, described a nightmarish dream. "I was standing in the backyard of my home, had my coat on. I felt something inside the cloth on the cuff of my left-hand sleeve. I worked it out, but it was fastened in the cloth and broke off as it came out, leaving part in. It proved to be a cocoon, and where broken a small black spider came out. The cocoon was black and left a great number of eggs, small ones, on my coat sleeve, which I began to pull off. The spider grew fast and ran away, speaking plain English as it ran, but what I do not remember, except that it was saying something about its mother. The next time I saw it, it was a large black spider which I seemed to know was the same one grown up, almost as large as my fist, had a red spot on it, otherwise was a deep black. At this time it had gotten into my house and had built a web all the way across the back inside the house and was comfortably watching me. I took a broom, knocked it down and out of the house, thinking I'd killed it, but it did more talking at that time. The next time I saw it, it had built a long web from the ground, on the outside of the house in the backyard, near where I first got it out of my sleeve, and it was running up toward the eave fast when it saw me. I couldn't reach it but threw my straw hat in front of it and cut the web, and the spider fell to the ground, talking again, and that time I hacked it to pieces with my knife. Perhaps because of a boyish loathing of spiders, I was fascinated with this dream. I had stumbled across it, shortly after my own introduction to the Casey readings, and wondered what the psychoanalysts would make of it, and how it would tally with Casey's interpretation. I copied the dream, and took it to a distinguished psychoanalyst, who had studied with the first of the great dream merchants, Sigmund Freud. I told him none of the particulars of the dream. It might have been dreamed yesterday or the day before, for all he knew. I did not tell him that Casey had already made an interpretation, in fact, made it some 35 years before. The learned psychoanalyst studied the dream text carefully, and then gave his analysis. The dreamer, he said, was destructively obsessed with the thought of breaking up his home. His views of women, including his wife, had been formed from a childhood resentment of his mother, and this transference was behind the breakup, the web or cocoon being the nest or home, the spider the obvious home breaker himself. After he finished, I showed him the Casey reading. He had heard vaguely of Casey, and he read the Casey interpretation with interest, inasmuch as he accepted the psychic as having been scientifically established. In my work with Dr. Freud, he said, there were many examples of clairvoyant and precognitive dreams. It even made a believer of Freud. Casey's report, intriguingly, tallied with that of the psychoanalysts, only Casey's delved far more extensively and prophetically into the home situation. He clearly saw the dreamer straying from his marital vows and warned that continuation of a clandestine relationship would ruin both home and business. Casey's explanation of the dream was as explicit as the dream was cryptic. In this dream, there is seen the symbolic conditions of those forces as are being enacted in the life of this body. And, as is seen, both the spider and the character of same are as warnings to the body as respecting the relations of others who would in this underhanded manner take away from the body those surroundings of the home that are in the manner of being taken unless such a stand is taken. For, as is seen, the conditions are of the nature emblematically shown by the relations of this body with this other body, the woman, that its relations at first meant only the casual conditions that might be turned to an account of good, in a social and financial manner. Yet, as has been seen, there has come the constant drain on the entity, not only in the pocket, but in the affections of the heart, and now such threaten the very foundations of the home, and, as seen, threaten to separate the body from the home and its surroundings, and unless the entity attacks this condition, cutting same out of the mind, the body, the relations, the conditions, there will come that condition as seen. Casey had no way of consciously knowing that the businessman had entangled himself in a financial way with his secretary, who had brought some shady backing into the business enterprise. Originally, as it developed, their relationship had been confined to business, but then had developed until he was, in fact, considering leaving his wife and family. At this point, as Casey saw, there was still time to withdraw. And so Casey viewed the dream as being of a warning nature, and so gave warning. Prepare self. Meet the conditions as a man, not as a weakling, and remember those duties that the body owes first to those to whom the sacred vows were given, and to whom the entity and body owes its position in every sense, as well as the duty that is obligatory to the body or those to whom the entity, the body, should act in the sense of the defender, rather than bringing through such relations those dark underhanded sayings, as are seen, as said by that one who would undermine, as well as are being said by those whom the body may feel such relations are hidden from, yet these have grown to such an extent as may present a menace to the very heart and soul of the body of this entity. In other words, the wife, too, was aware of the situation. The reading closed with an injunction rare for Casey. Beware. Beware. As might almost be expected of one who had gotten himself into this scrape, the businessman did not heed the warning. He kept on with his secretary, and lost wife, home, family, and business. However, following a divorce, he did marry the other woman. He was now so impressed by Casey's insight, that with his newfound wife he took himself to Virginia Beach to place himself at the disposal of the mystic. Casey could give him no advice, except to profit by the mistakes of the first marriage. He started a new business in the North, consulted Casey regularly, and managed maritally and business-wise, until his death recently. Long before the psychoanalysts, Casey had discovered a psychic content to dreams, Similar in prophetic insight to the seven fat years and seven lean interpretation given the Pharaoh's dream by Joseph and of the handwriting on the wall clarification by the prophet Daniel. The prophetic or precognitive dream might revolve around mundane things. As a matter of fact, Casey, interpreting one such dream, warned the dreamer to get out of the stock market, and predicted an unprecedented stock market crash in a few months. The forecast was made in April 1929, 6 months later Black Friday October 29, 1929, the market collapsed. The dreamer, a Wall Street broker, had kept a daily record of his dreams, in accordance with an advisory from Casey. Each morning, Casey interpreted the dreams that the man had the night before. The dreamer listened closely, as a rule, because he had made a fortune buying and selling stocks with Casey. On March 5, 1929, the Wall Streeter had his first dream reflecting misgivings about the bull market. He jotted his dream down on a night table pad and phoned it into Casey. "Dreamed we should sell all our stocks including box stock one considered very good. I saw a bull following my wife, who was dressed in red. Casey took this bull right by the horns. This is an impression of a condition which is to come about, a downward movement of long duration, not allowing latitude for those stocks considered very safe. Dispose of all, even box, great change to come." The dreamer was apparently sensitizing his own subconscious channels for precognitive dreams by a conscious effort to remember them each morning. On April 6, a month after the first market dream, the broker had another provocative dream. The dream was shorter, but considerably more complex than the first. "Dreamed a young man was blaming me for murder of a man. A gang asked, 'Is there anyone else in the world who knows this?' I answered, 'K. Cornell. Saw dead man. Gang started to administer poisonous hypodermic which had been used on dead man. I felt needle and expected death.' The dreamer awoke, startled. And then fell back into a troubled sleep. By this time his dream apparatus was so linked up to his conscious that he dreamed his own interpretation of the dream. This, he wrote, represented fight going on in reserve board stock stimulation. That same day, Casey prophetically clarified the dream. There must surely come a break where there will be panic in the money centers, not only of Wall Street's activity, but a closing of the boards in many other centers and a readjustment of the actual specie higher and lower quotations to continue for several moons while adjustments are being made then break. What followed is history. After the October crash, exchanges were closed in Wall Street and elsewhere. There was a major adjustment in the specie the United States and a number of other countries going off the gold standard. Casey's interpretation of the symbolism involved in the first dream would now be generally accepted. The red dress was obviously a danger warning, the bull a bull market, on its way out. Ironically, the wife was on the way out, too, divorcing the dreamer shortly thereafter. In the second dream, Casey went along with the gang identified as the Federal Reserve. The hypodermic needle was construed as a hypo for a sinking market. The attack was on the dreamer's financial stability, and spelled his death financially. The apparent reference to the well-known actress, Catherine Cornell, went unexplained. But certainly, Casey had scored a bullseye. Dreams of death are particularly disturbing to many. But for Casey this was often a hopeful symbol. On June 23, 1925, a subject was so shaken by a dream that he could only write, "Dreamed I died." Casey was reassuring. This is the manifestation of the birth of thought and mental development awakening in the individual. This, then, is the awakening of the subconscious, as manifested in death of physical forces. I must admit I was not always satisfied with Casey's interpretations. A Virginia woman, of Anglo-Saxon heritage, was having a physical reading for a condition of obesity, hemorrhoids, and a kidney disorder, when she threw in a request for a dream interpretation. It had come to her in 1932, before Hitler's rise, and when things were relatively quiet on the international scene. Looking back, it seemed rather evidential of the hard times Britain was soon to have. The dream follows. My husband and I seemed to be in a large dwelling, and looking out toward the sky we saw large black circles floating through the air. We thought this very strange, and soon discovered that the circles looked like black auto tires or large truck tires. Suddenly, out of the sky a big black machine, resembling the large caterpillar machines used during the World War, came down to Earth. We said we had better get out of the place, for we realized it was the intention of this machine to crush people to death. 2. We realized that it meant True Blues tunes, so we tried to get out of its way as quickly as possible. We walked down to the riverfront, and there saw a British ship tied up at the wharf. Someone said it had fired on the lone watchman while in his office on the wharf, but found out later that the watchman had fired on the British ship, which seemed to please us very much. We realized there were True Blues times in the making, and I was very much afraid. We walked further down the long wharf, and saw many more British ships. It seemed to me, looking back on what had happened up to and through World War II, that this was a plain warning of the division in England before the war, with Winston Churchill the lone watchman, giving and taking crossfire from his embattled British colleagues. Or could it be Britain standing alone, resisting the destruction from the sky, including clusters of rockets and massive bombers, until that lone ship, Britain, had become many British ships' many allies? Casey caught the difficulties Britain would be in, but Ms. explanation was rather general. This is a prophetic vision relating to those peoples that were mostly shown the British, as to the straits to which those peoples would pass, are passing. The fear that was felt would be the natural tendency, knowing and feeling the relationships of that land Britain to the whole world, as related to the self's own associations. The conditions seen, as from whence the aid or power came, as if from on high, in the form of circles that increased as they ballooned in their action through the heavens, indicate the way, character, or manner this people would aid themselves, in the appeal to the spiritual than to the power of force that was implied by the act of the lone watchman. Certainly, on reflection, it could be said that Churchill and Britain put their faith in God, but it seemed to me a prophecy about a war, dealing with a dream as detailed as this one, should have been more specific as to what the upshot of it all was going to be on Earth. I mentioned my dissatisfaction, or disappointment, to one of the A.R.E.S. dream experts, Everett Irion. He looked at me with obvious surprise. Don't you see? Casey was looking at the broad side of it. For in the last analysis, it was the spirit of the English that made them hold out, when practically everybody else had collapsed before the Germans. But why, I asked, were these people of obvious English background pleased in their dream to see a British ship fired upon? Irion shrugged. I would have to know more about their own frame of reference, and what these symbols meant to them. It could very well have been that the firing on the ship, say by Churchill, the lone watchman, conveyed the feeling that the British Navy, then downgraded by the appeasers, was to be jolted by this attack into some recognition of the realities of the situation. This would certainly have pleased any Anglophile. He laughed. I'm trying to reason this. Casey of course saw it intuitively, and certainly the intuitive should have a better grasp of the subconscious. If a dream was prophetic, was the foreseen event then fixed? After a dream which was clearly precognitive, materializing a year later when she walked into a room and saw the same people and furnishings she had envisioned in sleep, Gladys Davis asked Casey to explain how it was that dreams came to fulfillment. Are such conditions set at the time dreamed of? She asked, and why would one dream of any given condition? Casey replied that the law of cause and effect was immutable, that as thought and purpose and aim and desire are set in motion by minds, the result is certain and fixed, and therefore foreseeable. For its end, then, has been set in that He, the giver of the heavens and the earth and those things therein, has set the end thereof. The dreamer had tuned into a particular cycle of activity, Casey suggested, because of her interest in the people involved. Dream is but attuning an individual mind to those individual storehouses of experience that has been set in motion. At times, there may be a perfect connection, At others there may be the static of interference by inability of coordinating the own thought to the experience or actuality or fact set in motion. There were different reasons for different dreams. Those experiences that are visioned are not only, as has been given to some, to be interpreters of the unseen, but to others as prophecy, to others healing, to others exhortation, yet all are of the same spirit. Considerable emphasis has been placed in the Casey readings on the psychic content of our dreams. In fact, as Hugh Lynn Casey observed from his own study, the dream state may be the safest, quickest way for most of us to become aware of extrasensory perception, an agency of our own subconscious. Telepathy, clairvoyance, precognition, all seem commonplace in the dream world, all they require is the proper interpretation. And Edgar Casey was that interpreter. In December 1926, a woman came to Casey with a disturbing dream about a friend she had not seen in years. In her dream, her friend, Emmy, had committed suicide. Casey went into trance and explained that the dream was telepathic rather than prophetic or literal. Such conditions had passed through this mind, or it had contemplated such conditions. They have passed. A check was made of Emmy, and it developed that she had seriously contemplated suicide at one tune. But the crisis had passed. It was an odd dream, since the dreamer had apparently tuned into a thought that had been dismissed and buried away, and which was no longer in the conscious circuit of the other's mind. How then had the dreamer reached out and drawn in this information? It was real enigma, even granting that ESP was a reality. Casey was asked to indicate how this telepathic message had originated. His explanation may well apply to all psychic dreams. Other dreams there are, a correlation between mentalities or subconscious entities, wherein there has been attained, physically or mentally, a correlation of individual ideas or mental expressions, that bring from one subconscious to another actual existent conditions, either direct or indirect, to be acted upon or that are ever present. As Casey pointed out, tune was only an illusion at best. Hence we find visions of the past, visions of the present, visions of the future. For the subconscious there is no past or future, all is present. This would be well to remember in much of the information as may be given through such forces as these. In the normal frame of reference, it was difficult to gauge the source of some telepathic dreams. However, if Casey was infallible, as some suggest, then certainly evidence can be adduced for the survival of not only life, but of life interested in what it has left behind of friends and family on this terrestrial plane. One dreamer, back in September 1926, reported to the sleeping Casey, "My mother appeared to me. She said, 'I am alive.'" Casey, still somnolent, cut in, "She is alive." The dreamer appeared a little more shaken by the interruption than by the dream, but bravely continued on. His mother had then enjoined in the dream, "Something is wrong with your sister's leg or shoulder. She ought to see a doctor about it." Psychic researchers, crediting the psychic quality of the dream, might accept it as a dramatization of the dreamer's subconscious, rejecting it as evidence of a surviving spirit. But not Casey. In advising the dreamer to heed the dream warning, he stressed, "The mother, through the entity's own mind, is as the mother to all in the household." Warning, then, of conditions that may arise, and of conditions existent. Then, warn the sister as regarding same. The brother knew nothing of any physical difficulties his sister was having. He checked, without telling her about the Casey reading, and she mentioned, rather surprised, that her leg and shoulder were bothering her. Mother, or perhaps the subconscious self, tuned to the sister's subconscious, had known what it was talking about. And so had Casey. The dream state, when body and mind are relatively quiescent, is apparently the best channel for psychic messages. Some people, who have no apparent psychic ability, waking, become surprisingly attuned in the sleeping phase. At one point, the Casey home in Virginia Beach was virtually a dream laboratory, establishing precognition for even the most dubious who followed the dream readings. One young woman alone, in 4 years, had 8 readings, analyzing more than 300 dreams, a large number of these foreshadowing precognitive experiences with remarkable precision. On June 6, 1925, this married 21-year-old woman's dream record visualized a nameless girlfriend, obviously self, at a dinner table making violent love to an old friend. Casey warned of a return to an old admirer, and several years later, a checkup disclosed, the dreamer broke up her marriage to marry her admirer. The admirer then walked out on her, making the warning most apropos. According to Casey, virtually everything is dreamed before it happens, and so it was hardly a surprise to him that he was able to anticipate through her dreams practically everything of major account that was to happen to this woman in the next 30 years. On June 7, 1925, she had a perfectly wretched dream. She dreamed of a weak-minded child, though she had no children at this time. Casey was never more prophetic and tactful. Any condition, he stated, is first dreamed before becoming reality. It took a while for this dream to materialize, and the woman may very well have forgotten it. Then one day, some 25 years later, one of her children, now an adult, became a mental case. There was a method to her dreaming. She kept a pencil and pad at her bedside, and her dreams increasingly remained with her as she awakened. On July 18, 1925, she had a dream that her husband wasn't coming home anymore. It hardly required a Casey to sense trouble ahead on this one, though he did convey the warning. 5 years later, her husband stopped coming home to her home, anyway. They were divorced. More and more, as she kept a dream record, the woman's dream seemed clearly to be prophetic. On December 27, 1925, for instance, she dreamed that she and her sister were at her mother's bedside. The mother was unconscious, and both the dreamer and her sister were sobbing, "Don't leave us." It was again an almost literal warning, this time of her mother's death. Although her marriage appeared tranquil on the surface, there was obviously considerable suppressed material for the subconscious to brood over. For on July 17, 1926, she dreamed explosively of her relationship with her husband. She saw herself traveling on a boat with him. It was raining, and a flash of lightning struck the boat. The boiler blew up. To Casey, this was again a clear warning of an impending marital blow-up. By this time, this young woman was becoming so clearly psychic in the dream state that admirers of Casey wondered whether they had not found a potential disciple in the young matron. On November 17, 1926, for instance, she saw her cousin being married. It was literal as all that. Casey read the dream as precognitive. The cousin was married several months later. Casey was for everybody dreaming. As a clue to people interested in evaluating their own dreams, he suggested that the dream could be typed by its very nature. He was asked once, by a subject, "Are my dreams ever significant of spiritual awakening?" and he replied in rhetoric a bit more diffuse than usual. As experienced by the entity, there are dreams and visions and experiences. When only dreams without any spiritual message, these two are significant, but rather of the physical health. In visions where there are spiritual awakenings, these are seen most often in symbols or signs. In training yourself to interpret your visions, the expressions of eye, hand, mouth, posture, or the like must be understood in your own language. When these are then symbolic, know the awakening of the spirit is at hand. The trouble with dream symbols, of course, was that they varied with the individual outlook. So as Hugh Lynn Casey has so aptly pointed out, each individual to interpret his own dreams in the absence of a Casey must realize that the symbol for one intellect is not always the symbol for another. Out of the Casey dreamology, though, certain common symbols appear to have almost standard reference. Water, source of life, spirit, unconscious, boat, voyage of life, fire, wrath, cleansing, destroying, dead leaves, body, excrement or drosses, mud, mire, tangled weeds, needed purification or cleansing, naked image exposed, open to criticism, and fish an almost universal symbol of Christ, Christian, or spiritual food. A person, identified or otherwise, often represents what the dreamer feels toward that person, clothing, the manner or way in which one person appears to another, usually the dreamer. Different animals reflect some phase of self, as the individual dreamer feels about that animal. If he thinks about the fox as being tricky, and then dreams of a fox, he may regard himself deep down inside as being a rather shady person, and this may indicate great inner conflicts of which his conscious mind knows nothing. Different races, groups, associations influence or color the animal connotation. For the Hindu, or those steeped in yoga or oriental culture, the dreamed snake is both a symbol of wisdom and sex. The bull, for some, may symbolize the sex glands, and hence sexual activity. The Casey Dream Book flows on. Self-revealing dreams, stemming as they do from wish fulfillment, suppressed desires, and other worries and conflicts, are replete with symbolism. A gorilla may represent man's lower animal nature, a madman, unrestrained anger, a ship's captain, the steady helmsman, the higher self, sound principles, a house where one once lived, may relate to a traumatic experience there, a rough road, the experiencing of harsh travails. Often we are not up to directly facing the ugly side of our natures, hence the protective symbolism that makes it possible for dreams to be unpleasant without startling us into blood-curdling nightmares. The following dream, self-revealing in nature, was significantly obscure. The dreamer wrote it down carefully, not missing a single detail in the transfer from pillow to pad. A policeman was leading a man who had his two hands tied up across his chest. The policeman led him up to the gallows, about which a great crowd of people were gathered. Just as they were about to slip the noose over his head, he slipped down a long slide, the policeman clinging to him. The man crawled desperately and speedily on his stomach, through the milling crowd, thus escaping the policeman. The dreamer elaborated on the prisoner. I could see his black nude form as he crawled very quickly along the ground. Finally, he came into a yard of a brick house, still crawling on his stomach very fast. He continued in this manner until he bumped his head on the brick wall of the house. This threw him backwards and stunned him. As he lay there on his back, an old woman came out of the house and regarded him. She started toward him, and as she did so, the man stood up and the back of him suddenly appeared to me as a nude Negro, with an animal tail attached. He resembled both a Negro and an animal. The dreamer was a 48-year-old woman, whose son was about to marry a Southern girl. She felt she had no strong prejudices against Negroes, but had dwelt consciously, in view of the impending marriage, on the lynching problem in the South, some 30 years ago. The Casey dream reading made the dark figure, the Negro who at the same time seemed an animal, a symbol which was turned inward for an examination of the self actually, the center of nearly every remembered dream. What the Negro represented to the woman was symbolic only in reflecting her own hidden attitudes, dramatically revealing the prejudices she was concealing from herself as well as others. In taking on the animal form, Casey explained, the entity sees in itself a still more dreaded condition. In the opening part of the dream, the entity sees the dark figure as someone bringing trouble to itself by its own doing. This truth escapes as it were from the mass criticism, and then is halted by the wall. As it stands up, the entity recognized the self or the lower nature of self. The woman is admonished in the dream to study all the elements of truth, even those about self which become troublesome and obnoxious. As it developed, the woman admitted she was strongly disturbed within herself by the thought of sexual relations between blacks and whites, and yet this feeling made her darkly ashamed of herself, so that she herself, dream-wise, became the Negro she secretly deplored. Once acknowledging the truth, she seemed more at ease about the problem, to the point, anyway, where she no longer dreamed about it. The Casey readings revealed a certain consistency in the inherent symbolism of dreams, since, in the dominant white Anglo-Saxon culture, the average person in the mainstream of society at work, school, or play is exposed to pretty much the same attitudes and outlooks, whether or not he accepts them. The symbolism of the dark animal figure, conveying an impression of sinister, unbridled power, cropped up with striking frequency in dreams analyzed by Casey, and as Casey saw them correctly, the psychoanalysts now tell us the figures revealed an unfavorable side of the individual, which the conscious blocked, and the unconscious obscured. This might be an apparent prejudice, as with the woman who dreamed of the Negro, or suppressed animalistic sex urges, or greed, bad temper, envy, anything obviously negative impairing the individual's own regard for himself. A middle-aged woman brought a typically nightmarish dream to Casey. She was considerably agitated, for the dream had been violent, and perhaps prophetic. My husband, his mother, and I were living together in a house in New Jersey. I heard much shooting and excitement. All of the windows of our house were open and it was raining and storming outside. We rushed to close and lock them. Some terrible wild man seemed to be running through the town shooting and causing great trouble, and the police were chasing him. Casey was able to reassure the woman. She had no storm to worry about, no fireworks, no explosive shooting. All the excitement, all the pent-up storm was in her. She had a rotten disposition, and unless she learned to curb it, was headed for trouble. Or as Casey put it, the large man, the bugaboo, that comes to the entity in these emblematical symbolic conditions here presented, and as seen in others, is in self and self's temper. See. She saw. Because the symbols must be seen in the dreamer's own perspective, he may interpret them better than anybody else if he understands the symbology. Some symbology, of course, is general. As the house was the body in a Casey dream reading, a burning house could be anger, or it could be the end of a marriage, if the house burned down, as it would then be all-consuming. One dream can express many different things. A Norfolk housewife, interested in the work of the ARE, dreamed that her home was burning. All she saw left was the number, 912. She had had other precognitive dreams before that had materialized a girlfriend's divorce, a relative's getting in trouble with the police. The day after her dream, she walked into a shop to pick up a dress and puzzled by the significance of the numerals, she related what she had dreamed. The number caught the proprietor's ear. What did you say those numerals were? 912, she repeated. He checked through some papers, and then his eyes widened. Why didn't you tell me about this yesterday? He said in an angry voice. The girl shrugged, what difference would it make? What difference? I would have won $2,000, it's the winning number. She explained that she didn't know about such things. You were supposed to come in for that dress yesterday, he said accusingly. He threw the suit across the counter at her. Next time you dream of three numerals, tell somebody about it. Weeks later, studying up on dreams, the girl wondered whether the rest of it was prophetic, too. Her own marriage had just gone up with the flaming house. As interpreted by Casey, many symbols were of an obvious nature, easy to adapt to dreams, generally. Missing a train or bus, hurry up to get life in order, barbed wire entanglement or rough highway difficulties along the way, one shoe, a poor foundation, right turn, the correct course, left turn, the wrong, beaver, an industrious person or job, mud, scandal, or dirty linen, rabbit, timidity, or sex, a wall a barrier to new ideas, lack of open-mindedness. In the same vein, repairing an old house indicated changing concepts, crossing a stream or river the beginning of a new venture. A baby or child, generally, meant a new start, or if associated in the dreamer's conscious mind with problems, it could signify small problems. In Norfolk, in a tavern known as Gigi's, the proprietress, Mrs. Sally Cody, had been dreaming precognitively ever since she could remember. But when she saw children in her dreams, it didn't mean anything creative, it meant problems, small problems, because her children had always represented small problems to her. I dream of a child, and the next day, I know I'm going to have trouble, a little trouble like the health authorities or the liquor authorities coming in to complain about something. She tried to close off her dreams, but it wouldn't work. She, too, had had a dream about a number once, but it was in New York City, when she had a store on Mulberry Street, and she knew what to do about it. She was in a state of emotional strain when the dream came. She was going into a hospital for major surgery, and had been told that her hospitalization insurance did not apply. She needed more than $1,000, and had nowhere to turn for the money. On this particular night she had dreamed of a number 4-11-66 and was musing about it, when she looked out through the window of her store onto the street. There standing idly, where she had never seen him before, was a man named Charlie, a runner for the Italian lottery, which was big in the neighborhood. She went to the door. "What are you doing out there, Charlie?"
"I have the day off," he said.
She took out 3 $1 bills. "Here," she said, "are 3 numbers, will you play them in the lottery for me?" She considered his appearance a sign. The lottery was decided at the end of the week, and this was a Monday. "I'll be back Thursday," Charlie said. She didn't care to explain she was going into the hospital. "Take it now," she insisted. He finally agreed. That weekend, the dreamer recalled, "My brother phoned me at the hospital, and said, 'Charlie's looking for you, he's got $1,500 for you.'" The numbers had come through. While Casey is gone, dreams live on at the ARE. After attending a dream seminar at Virginia Beach, a young man kept a record of his dreams, interpreting them according to his own frame of reference and standard symbols mentioned by Casey. What he did with one dream, apparently anyone can do with his own dreams, perhaps opening up a new realm of insight into one's life. The following dream was analyzed months after the study project. The young man, in his early 20s, saw himself standing at the ocean, fishing. The water was clear but turbulent. Standing next to him on the sand was a small figure, a replica of himself, weeping. His larger self caught a fish, an orange-hued flounder, and gave it to the smaller self, who promptly stopped crying. But the flounder flopped out of the smaller figure's hands, landing in a clump of bushes, and the small self began to cry again. The dream's larger self poked through the bushes for the fish, but as he parted the foliage, discovered the fish being eaten by 2 animals, a white rabbit and a beaver. The beaver ran off, vanishing, the rabbit leaped into the ocean, swam about for a while, then returned tired and bedraggled. After writing down the dream, the young man studied each symbol separately, passing over some whose meaning was not readily clear, then coming back to them in a day or two. After 2 days of intermittent study, he had compiled a list of symbols, relating each symbol to his own feeling about it, hoping in this way to find out what was stirring in his unconscious mind. He began with ocean. "I have read that water means spirit or source of life, or the unconscious. Then, fishing, act of seeking in the spiritual realm. A fish, something out of the spiritual realm. The self, larger, myself as I am now in the physical. Smaller self, could this be my childhood? Was I starved or hungry in childhood? Sobbing over not getting the fish. Crying wanting something, stopped crying with fish. Fish got away, lost something, which started smaller self crying again. Beaver, work like a beaver. Rabbit, timid." This was the first listing. Reworking his dream, the young man began to form a discernible pattern. Ocean, whatever the ocean stood for, spiritual source of life or the unconscious, it was beautifully clear, but turbulent. A fish was the symbol used by early Christians, could this mean Christ, or spiritual food? The self, larger, I seem to be seeking, or fishing, as I am now doing in real life, for direction for my life and solutions to my problems. The self, smaller, this isn't a child. It is an exact duplicate of me. Can this be the part of me which needs spiritual food, small, undeveloped, a part of me that is crying out and is satisfied when given the fish? Maybe this is not my childhood, as first thought, but rather part of me as I am now, which needs help.
Fish got away somehow, my spiritual food is getting away. Beaver, when I think of a beaver, I think of work. Maybe this is my job. The dream could not be properly analyzed without knowing more of the young man's situation. He was working in a factory at the time, making parts for missiles, was troubled about making munitions that might be destructive one day, and had taken to hanging out with bad company, using profanity carelessly and drinking at bars after work. Consequently, a bickering relationship had developed at home with a young wife. In a very real sense, it then became apparent to the non-psychic dream interpreters that the beaver, his work, was actually eating up his spiritual food. Like many essentially idealistic, puritanically schooled young Americans, he blocked out sex symbolism, and the symbolism was rather obvious in the white rabbit. He had written subsequently that he had raised them as a boy. Sometimes I liked them. A lot of times it was hard work taking care of them. What he apparently meant, it developed from questioning, was that he was intrigued by the rabbit's sex habits, and he had apparently learned something from watching them. His sex attitude, the rabbit could be consuming his spiritual food, the fish. Reviewing the dream, and the thought process connected with its interpretation, it would seem, offhand, a great deal of bother for one dream. However, the dream, with its interpretation, did have something to do with reshaping the young man's life. It got him thinking about himself, about the warning he had apparently received, and he acted on it. He quit his job, the beaver ran away, and got another he considered more constructive. He took stock of his marriage, the sex habits that endangered that marriage, the rabbit swam around for a while, and attempted to reform. Dreaming had awakened him, and perhaps saved his marriage. Only recently, 1965, the ARE held its first seminar on dreams. It was supervised by Drive W. Lindsay Jacob, a Pittsburgh psychiatrist, who has helped patients by analyzing their dreams, and Dr. Herbert B. Puryear, a clinical psychologist at Trinity University in San Antonio. Both had studied the Casey dream readings. Both found dreams an invaluable channel for resolving the inner conflicts of the emotionally torn. Just as Casey had pointed out the relevance of all dreams, Dr. Puryear, too, observed, no dream comes from nowhere. The emotionally disturbed dreamed recurringly of being engulfed by water, or of violent accidents, or even atomic attack, the last often characteristic of a brooding depression bordering on the suicidal. What Casey had said about dreams 40 or 50 years before, science and advanced science, at that was now postulating. The physical, psychical, and spiritual are reflected in different kinds of dreams, Dr. Jacob pointed out. Flying saucers, for instance, could mean something beyond our comprehension, a will, an expression of spirituality, a camel the subconscious, an automobile the dreamer's own body, his higher self, a clergyman, judge, law officer, or an old man with a white beard. They all had significance for the students of dreams. About 30 persons of various ages joined in the dream seminar. The young and eager seemed particularly with it some college students, who had hitchhiked across the country to participate, lyrically reported a series of dreams within dreams. This was a device, expert Everett Irion passed on, to apprise the subconscious of a psychic message, usually precognitive. Other dreams revealed the students involved in ego-releasing conflicts to better understand themselves. This was the new generation that accepted the psychic as readily as travel to the moon, and their enthusiastic openness apparently induced significant dreaming. Much was learned in the seminar about dreaming. When the dream was unpleasant, the subconscious would often block off all dreaming. A youthful-appearing grandmother, who ordinarily dreamed regularly, suddenly could not remember her dreams, no matter how many conscious suggestions she gave herself, or how diligently she put pad and pencil at her side. While others in the dream class cheerfully sat around and recalled their dreams, she had nothing to report. Nevertheless, during the night, when each sleeping member of the seminar was under personal observation, her eyeballs were seen moving under closed lids, a telltale sign of dreaming. Just as the eyelids stopped quivering, she was awakened, so that her dreams would be fresh in her memory, but she could only shake her head. She could remember nothing. The class good-naturedly accused her of blocking. Everett Irion, conducting the class, tried to get her to recall the last dreams she had, thinking they might provide a clue. Searching her mind, she finally recalled a fragmentary dream she had shortly before the seminar began, a week previously. And then she remembered still another dream. Obviously, she had begun blocking, as soon as the seminar opened, not wanting to discuss her dreams with anybody, nor touch on a situation that might have been stirring her subconscious. Only recently, she disclosed under group questioning, she had been going through a bit of an emotional crisis. Her granddaughter, who had been living with her for some time, had just been taken back by the mother, and the grandmother was heartsick and lonely. She was yearning for the child, so much so that she broke into sobs just talking about it. The dreamer was a Mrs. Belva Hardy, a youngish middle-aged type, and a well-known teacher of music. She was interested in dreams, generally, and quite willing to explore her own with me. She remembered both dreams well now. The most significant vision came the night she checked into ARE headquarters for the dream seminar. She called it the porpoise dream. Two porpoises were playing in the water, in a setting similar to the marine land of the Pacific. They were leaping and gambolling about and talking together, they were extremely happy. Meanwhile, Belva was standing on the bank, watching. Suddenly somebody came by with a straw hat turned upside down past the hat in front of her and asked her to give some food to the porpoise. She dropped 3 kernels of corn into the hat and said, "Be sure to bring it back because I don't have much." Even to a neophyte, the meaning seemed apparent evidently. Belva's dream subconscious had been triggered by the approaching dream conference, and her subconscious had dredged up the problem. It was obvious who the porpoises were, and she, Belva, was on the sidelines. Next, Belva dredged up her fragmentary dream. A young couple is silhouetted some distance from me. The young lady is dressed in blue. The dream said, "Don't bother to write this one down, there is more coming." She was already blocking. After this fragment, Belva went dreamless for straight nights. Everett Irion pointed out that if dream material is ignored or suppressed, the individual does not dream for a while. In some detail, Irion had clarified the symbology of the porpoise dream. The Pacific signified peace, corn was the highest spiritual food, the 3 kernels representing Father, Son, Holy Ghost, and when Belva said, "Be sure to bring it back," this very clearly meant that she wanted the child back. The obvious interpretation had also struck her. The 2 porpoises were her daughter and granddaughter. Their reunion was an extremely happy one, and they were enjoying each other. She should cut her own ties, and bless the situation. This would free her mind, including the distracted subconscious, and prepare her for whatever was best for her. Belva got the message. She sat down and prayed, and her prayers were for what was best for the child. Permeating goodwill, she subsequently visited her daughter and the child in California. The daughter reacted with similar warmth and understanding. When the conversation got around to the child's schooling, the daughter suggested, surprisingly, that the girl might do better in an Eastern school. "I had broken my hold on the child," Belva observed, "and now I found her coming back to me, this time for her own good and not to fill my own little needs." At last report, the child was with the grandmother again, and Belva was dreaming good solid dreams every night. She had nothing to keep from herself.